Yeah, so we are up to, we're up to Mishnah Hay. Okay, just to quickly chazer what we did. We're not really chazering everything because everything is very random, as is, it's adios. We pointed out that Mishnah's adios is a compilation of random halachos and Mishnahs that have nothing to do with each other except in structural form. We pointed out the first Mishnah was details of Hilchos Nida, second Mishnah was details of Hafrashas Chala, the third Mishnah we spoke about the various halachos of what passes a mikvah, and the fourth Mishnah we spoke about the idea of why we would bother quoting Shammai and Hillel if it all passes. Then we mentioned Eilu V'Ilu a little bit briefly at the end. So that's basically what we did yesterday. We're up to Mishnah Hay. So the Mishnah asks, continuing on the theme of Mishnah Dalid, Mishnah asks...
Continuing?
Yeah, I know, right? So asks Mishnah Hay, the Lama Maskir and Divrei HaYachid Bein HaMerubin. So why do we mention the words of a Yachid, of an individual, that looks like we don't paskin like, amongst the Rabbi? It's similar to the question of the previous Mishnah. The previous Mishnah asked, what is... One second. Hey. So guys, the Mishnah, again, one more time. The Mishnah says, and we're up to Mishnah Hay. Guys, the Mishnah asks, why do we mention the words of the Yachid amongst the Rabbim? In halacha if we only pass like the Rabbim anyway, we have a clown in the Gemara that what? Yachid Rabbim halacha Rabbim, we always know that we pass like the Rov. So why bother mentioning the Das Yachid if we don't even pass like him? So the Mishnah says that if you see a Bezdin who's following the words of a Yachid, so you know that the words of a Yachid are reliable. In other words, if I have a machlokas between the Chachamim and, I don't know, face Rebbe Eliezer, and we find a Bezdin following Rebbe Eliezer, so you know that that's who they're relying on. And we have a cloud, the Mishnah says, a famous cloud that we know from Megillat Abis, from Sanhedrin, from all over the place in Shas. The Mishnah says that in Bezdin Yachal Levato, Divri Bezdin Chaviro, Ela Imkin Gadol Mimenu Bechachmu Viminu. What does that mean? That a later Bezdin is not allowed to undo, overturn the words of an earlier Bezdin, unless the later Bezdin is greater in number and in Chachma. Now, there's what? Well, so that's it's very unclear what Chachma and Minyan are referring to. So you're showing to try to figure out what that means. Maybe Chachma means the Rosh Sanhedrin is smarter, not the Sanhedrin as a whole. So it's not so clear what Chachma means. But Lamaisa, you can't have a later Bezdin. And the assumption always is that whenever the Anshei Knesset HaGadol established something, they were the smartest Bezdin that ever lived. The Haraya, everything that we do pretty much today, that's not strictly Midoraisa, comes from the Anshei Knesset HaGadol, all Tfila is from the Anshei Knesset HaGadol. A lot of things... Okay, but I'm saying it has its origins. Yeah. Well, the Sanhedrin in Anshei is with the word of Zekinim from during the Beis Hamikdash, during around time of the Beis Hamikdash, where they instituted all these takanos, tefillah, things like that. The Sanhedrin varies in every generation. You have a Sanhedrin in every generation, right? It forces halakha. They were a body of Tamini Chachamim that instituted Tila. In other words, they made takanos that we follow today. That was Anshei Knesset HaGadol lived. I think they ran into Bayit Sheni. I don't know. I think that they spanned over a few hundred years. I think they spanned over a few hundred years.
I always thought that Anshei Knesset HaGadol was like the last great body.
Meaning,
of fame.
Correct, but
like before everyone just
right, experts. Right, correct. The Anshei Knesset HaGadol, I think it spanned over a certain time period. It wasn't just like one time.
The last emperor, like, they kind of, like, knew
there was... Yeah, the Mishnah of Hergil was the Shimon HaTzadik, was the last of the Anshei, great Mishiyari Anshei Knesset HaGadol.
Yeah, and
He was in Bayit Sheni. He was one of the leader. He was one of the, part of the leader generation, okay? So, guys, the Mishnah says we have this klal, that a later Bezdin is not able to overturn the words of an earlier Bezdin unless they're greater than Chachma and Minyan. What about how you got the men of Chachma, v'lo many men of Chachma, enu yachal levato devarav, ad sheyi HaGadol. It has to be both. Right, we're going to the second page. That in order to overturn the takan of an earlier bezin, it has to be greater both in chachma as well as minyan. Mishnah vav. So that again, that's going to be a question about what the word minyan actually means in this context. It's not so clear the minyan, as I pointed out before. If the numbers are stagnant, it's the same number of people every time. So minyan seems to be an insignificant notion. But again, in the Rishonim discuss what minyan and what chachma actually means. So that's not for right now. Mishnah vav. Why mention the words of the Yachid for no reason if we don't even paskin like the Yechidim? If a guy says, I have a Masorah, I have a tradition that I paskin like this guy, so you can say, oh, that's the Shitas HaYachid that no one paskins like. Now, again, this Mishnah can also be used. I remember we spoke about yesterday in the context of Eilu Eilu. You can also take this Mishnah in the same direction. Say, what do you mean? Why do I mention the Yachid amongst the Rabbim? Because the Yachid also has value. Being Mitzah Talmud Torah, being Mitzah because it has value of Eilu Eilu. Now, what does the Mishnah actually say, though? The Mishnah says, why do we mention the Yachid? Because if a guy says, I follow X, you can say, oh, that's Shitas HaYachid. And what's the obvious problem with this Mishnah? What's yeah?
Well, because the answer is wrong.
What do you mean the answer is wrong?
You can't just say, oh, I follow the
thank you. So he says that what? That let's say I find a guy who decides, right? There's a machlokas in the Gemara in the 19th paragraph of Shabbos, right? We have a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva.
Remember
from the womb? You got it? So we have machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah Shabbos. What does the Mishnah Shabbos say? Machlokas about our machshiri mila docha Shabbos. For example, everyone knows that bris mila is docha Shabbos, but there's a machlokas. What about all the preparatory stages leading up to a bris mila? For example, can I chop down a tree to sharpen a knife for a bris mila? According to Rabbi Eliezer, that's mostly on Shabbos. The way we pass like Rabbi Akiva, that it's us. So the Gemara is, so what if I find a guy... What? No, the bris has to be pushed off. You have to have everything ready other than the mila itself to go on Shabbos. You can't, prepare things on Shabbos. So let's say I find a guy who's doing machshir mila on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says, oh, I go to that guy and say, oh yeah, he's following Rabbi Eliezer. What do you mean he's following Rabbi Eliezer? That's chayiv skila. You possibly like Rabbi Akiva. If you're doing that's malacha on Shabbos. We don't possibly like Rabbi Eliezer. What kind of crazy thing is this? So what's Shabbos? So that same Gemara, by the way, in Shabbos, mentions this example and another example, the following context. The Gemara says there was a certain city where Rabbi Eliezer was the Rav, and they paskin like Rabbi Eliezer for everything. He was the Rav of the town. So that town followed Rabbi Eliezer. And the Gemara says that town, nobody died prematurely. Everyone lived out their full lives because they followed Rabbi Eliezer. I understand. We don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. Why is it a good thing to follow him? The answer is because whenever you have the Rav of your town, he's a bar hachi. He's a person who deserves to have an opinion in psak halakha. Not everyone deserves to have an opinion, as a Shechter likes quoting a lot. He deserves to have an opinion. So if he deserves to have an opinion, even though he's outvoted la halakha by everybody else, but it doesn't matter. You can follow his shita if you are part of his community. For another example, the Gemara says on the same lines. There's a machlokas between Rabbi Yosi HaGalili and the Chachamim regarding whether there's an issur to have chicken and milk. We know the Torah says basar, right? Refers to the issur of meat and milk. What about chicken and milk? So we pass that the chicken and milk is an issur d'rabbanan. Tosfos happens to pass that it's an issur d'oraisa, and the Rambam backhandedly basically calls Tosfos not really a kofar, but calls Balia Tosfos, he basically makes fun of them, because the Rambam holds that if a person claims. The Rambam holds that if a person claims that a din d'rabbanan is a din d'oraisa, he's in violation of the Isra, next week's parsha of Baal Tosef. And you know what example the Rambam gives of that? That says, like, for example, if a person thinks that chicken and milk is d'oraisa, which Tosef happens to think, that chicken and milk is d'oraisa, he's in violation of Baal Tosef. So according to the Rambam, Tosef violated Baal Tosef. Duress to what? This is not a low susser question. That's a different question. But in other words, Lamaisa the Rama thinks, again, this is not trying to figure out, what about chicken and milk. But Lamaisa the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Yosi HaGalili, however, it's mutter lich adhila to have chicken and milk. Now again, we don't possibly like Rabbi Yosi HaGalili, possibly like the Chachamim. And possibly like the Rama, that it's Mishnah Rabban and not a Mishnah Duraisa. So the question is, the Gemara has the same story. In Rabbi Yosi HaGalili's town, the people ate chicken and milk, and they possibly like Rabbi Yosi HaGalili, and they also lived out their full lives. So again, this Mishnah. So again, it depends. If you come from Mesorah, 20 generations of Rabbi Yosi HaGalili next, people who always eat chicken and milk, that's their thing. So again, that could be a Mesorah, a Minna question. It depends. That's a tricky question to say what happens generations later. Again, correct. Correct. No, correct. No, I mean, again, if a person has a certain stature in terms of psak halakha, okay, even if his particular opinion gets outvoted, so right, for the masses,
so
for
one second.
If the masses, the majority of Am Yisrael, they're not allowed to follow Rabbi Yosef Lili, they're not allowed to follow Rabbi Eliezer, right, because they were outvoted in halakha. But that doesn't mean to say that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yosef Lili themselves are not entitled to their own opinion. They don't have to back down from their own opinion. If their opinion has legitimacy, and they are people who deserve to have an opinion in halakha, they are entitled to their own opinion to the extent that anyone who claims to be part of their community or that calls him their Rav, being the Kula, being the Chumra, meaning they're going to follow his Chumras also. They're always going to follow his Kulas. They have the right, they're entitled, that's what the Mishnah says, they're entitled to rely on his Kulas. Well, again, the question of how long that extends is a tricky question. Yeah. So the Mishnah here is telling the following. If I see a guy who's eating chicken and milk who lives in Rabbi Yosi HaGalili's community, I say, he's following Rabbi Yosi HaGalili's Pesach. And that's okay. That's good. And not only is it good, he's going to get a Arichas Yomim for that because he's following the Pesach of his Rebbe of Rabbi Yosi HaGalili. That's the theme over here of Mishnah Vav. Okay. So now we're done with the Musari part. Now we get back into very technical halacha. Mishnah Zayin, guys. Let's take a look. Bishamay Omrim. Rova atzamos min haatzamim bein mishnayim bein mishlosha. V'mesil omrim rova atzamos min hagviya. Merov habinyin, no merov haminyin. Shalai omrim afilu me'atzamechah. So what is this talking about? This is talking about the dinim of Tumas Meis. We alluded to this a little bit before also. The dinim of Tumas Meis, the question is, what is the minimum amount of a dead body that will contract Tumah? How much of a meis, of a bone, of a piece of flesh, of a dead body, do you need to have in order to contract Tumah to make something else Tumah? So comes Bishamai and says, Rova Atzamos, if you have a quarter of a kav of bones of a dead body, whether those bones come from one meis, two meis, three meis, it doesn't matter. That's the shot of the Mishnah. Rova means Rova HaKav. That's just what it means in the Mishnah.
How do you know it doesn't mean a quarter of bones?
Quarter of what? No, because we'll see in the next part of the Mishnah that he's talking about the general skeletal structure, according to Beis Hillel. The Mishnah says, according to Shammai, you have to have a quarter kav of bones, and that could be from one mace, two mace, it doesn't matter how many mace, as long as you have a total of a quarter kav of bones, that's going to become tummy. Comes Beis Hillel and says, no, Beis Hillel says that the quarter, this, I don't want to say it before, the quarter kav of bones that you have to come from Minhagviyah, from one body, and they have to be Merov HaBinyan, or Merov HaBinyan, which means either the majority of the skeletal structure of the maze, or the majority and quantity of the number of bones of the dead body. According to Beis Hillel, it's not enough to have multiple dead bodies. You have to have one dead body, and the bones have to be from the majority of either the skeletal structure or the number, the quantity, the number of bones from the dead body. Yeah, exactly. And then Shammai comes along, not to be confused with Beis Shammai, as we've already seen in the earlier Mishnayos. Shammai comes along and says, Afilu me'atzavecha. No, it doesn't have to be from the majority of the skeletal structure, even if it's coming from one bone. But it's a quarter of a kav. That's also going to be good. That's also going to make it. It's also going to make it tummy. Okay, Mishnah Ches. Karshine Truma. What are Karshine Truma? Vet. Okay, so Ashkut. Yes, but what does vetch mean? Yes, I know the English. So vetch is, it's animal food, but it can be eaten by humans. B'shas
arachat.
Yes, it's primarily animal food, but it can theoretically be eaten by humans if they need to. Because you looked at the article above it. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, wait, two ways. First of all, they mentioned it in Hilchos.
Yes.
And also,
I know.
Because, like, yeah,
it's good for you. I know. Karshine Truma, so the Mishnah says, yeah.
What about carrots? Like rabbits and humans eat them. They're both animals.
So again, this food is not really, it's not really edible for humans. Humans can eat it if, like, they push themselves, but it's vetch. I don't really know what vetch is, but it's something which is primarily animal food, but b'shas arachat can be people, basically.
It's like one of the things that you probably said 1,000 times in your life, and you still have no idea what it is.
Right, correct, exactly. That is actually correct. So what's the din when it comes to actually vetch of Truma? So Karshine Truma, so the Mishnah B'Shamay Omrim, Shorin V'Shafin V'Tahara U'Machilin V'Tumah. So B'Shamay says, I can soak and I can rub oil on the vetch when the vetch, when the Karshinim are Tahar, and I can even, and I can feed the vetch to my animals, even B'Tumah. Now, what is this talking about? We know the din is, when Truma, there's an Isser to allow your Truma to become Tumah. If your Truma does become Tumah, you have to burn the Truma. That's the din. So if I have a situation where I have food, which is primarily animal food. There's no din of tahara for animal food. And animals allowed to eat truma. Animal can eat tummy. Right? There may be an issue for you to feed truma to your animal, but if you're a kohen, you can feed truma to your animal. If you're a Yisrael, there may be a problem for you to feed say, truma to a. Yeah. So, but here.
But the reason that the word that Baal Tassim does not apply to truma is because it's holy.
Yes, but so here, this could be truma that's owned by the Kohen, which is allowed to feed his animal. Correct. But here we're talking about what's owned by the Kohen, where it's a question of truma and tahara. So the Mishnah says, I'm allowed to take my kashine truma, and if they're I'm allowed to be shuffled, I can rub the oil on it, or I can also soak it in water in tahara, meaning to say, that's what I'm going to use it for people food, when I want to eat the kashinim. So if I soak it and put oil on it, we'll make it a little bit more edible. But if I'm intending to feed it to my animals, it doesn't matter if it's tahara or if it's tahara. However, Basil Omer, no, the Shafin bit Tahara. Basil distinguishes, says, yeah, you can soak it when it's tahara, but in terms of rubbing the oil on and in terms of feeding it to your animals, so that you could do even bituma. Bishamay Omer, Yochut Srid, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Koma Sam Bituma. Bishamay says that you can eat it. You can eat the karshinim when they're dried up. What does that mean when they're dried up? When they're crumbling, when they're about to fall apart. Rabbi Akiva said, because at that point they're not really edible even for human consumption. Comes Rabbi Akiva and says, Kol ma'aseh b'tumah. He says, you can eat karshinim when they're tummy all the time. You know, karshinim never have to be tummy. right? The point is, you always have Karshinim, even when they're
tough.
What?
For,
yeah, I mean, yeah, presumably for the context of the Mishnah, we're talking about a coin. Okay, so.
Wait.
Yeah.
Animal food
doesn't have the restrictions of Tumah v'Tara. There's no necessity for them to be Tara. According to Rabbi Akiva, Karshinim are just animal food.
If Tumah gets Tumah,
you have to burn it.
Why do you feed your animal?
What?
Why do you feed it to your animal?
Why can't you feed Tumah with your animal? I guess theoretically you could. Okay, I'm saying, I guess theoretically you could. I guess you could feed Tumah to your animal, but...
No, maybe you can't.
No, I'm saying, if you're a...
Animal food just, like, does not have a thing up to burn it.
Again, that's going to depend on the machlokas of this Mishnah. According to Rabbi Akiva, Karshinim is only animal food. In other words, according to Rabbi Akiva, there's no application where Karshinim is people food, which means that according to Rabbi Akiva, everything's mutter. I can take Karshinim to Tumah and feed it to my animal. I can even eat Karshinim myself when it's Tumah. It doesn't matter because Karshinim is fundamentally animal food. So it doesn't. When something is fundamentally.
Become true.
Well, no.
According
to Rabbi Akiva, you're saying? Well, I'm saying you could be mafresh. You could be. Shuma happens, right? We could be mafra shuma on things that are not necessarily, right? Maybe me the rabbanim, there's a concept, right? Me the rice, which only applies on dog like tiro fiat, right? Wine, oil, and green. But theoretically, you can have shuma the rabbanim on other things also. Meiser, me the rice also applies, yeah. The rabbanim on vegetables, fruits, everything else. Okay, this is not a shir about Judaism 101 and how the rabbanim
works.
Well, okay. I mean, good morning, America. When you learn Gemara, you notice that, you know, half our religion are, I mean, not actually, but are Dinei Derabanan, you know, Siyagim and Takanos, that's Xeros, right? Why can't you clap your hands on Shabbos? Because I might fix the piano. No, I won't. Doesn't matter. Why can't I drink water that's left open? The snake might inject venom. No, it won't. Okay, but that may not apply to you. Depends who you ask. Have you ever seen Rosh Hashanah clap on Shabbos? Yeah. Okay, guys, it's not a shir about Takanos Darabana, okay? Very different type. Guys, take a look at Mishnah Test, okay? How many of you have learned Bava Metzia before?
There you go.
Okay, guys, these are two very important Mishnahis that come from the Mishnahis and Bava Metzia. From Perek Hazav.
No!
Says Mishnah Test. Guys, the Mishnah is so hard, it's amazing. Okay, take a look. The next two Mishnahis. Mishnah Test, Mishnah Yah. Says Mishnah Test. Haporit Sela Mimos Meiser Sheni. The following scenario. Okay? Guys, listen up, okay? There is a din. Guys, listen up. There is a din that if I have money which has Kedusha of Meiser Sheni, so the only way I'm able to use that money for my own benefit is if I go to Yerushalayim and I redeem the Meiser Sheni. Okay? Straightforward. Now, how do you redeem Meiser Sheni? What do you do to redeem Meiser Sheni?
I don't know.
Killing me.
You buy something in Yerushalayim and eat it.
A little more specifically.
Wait, how do you redeem the food onto the coin or the coin back?
Okay, good. Okay, you basically said, yeah. In other words, you take certain coins, and we'll leave this on the divide right now. You take certain coins and you transfer the Kedusha from the Meiser Sheni to the coins. In the Lashon HaMishnah, it's called Mechalalin Al Hamaus. You literally defile or you transfer Kedusha from the Meiser Sheni to the coins, and that way the coins are Kedusha, and now your Meiser Sheni is no longer Meiser Sheni, and you can eat it however you want. There's no more Kedusha. That's it.
Wait a minute, you've already done it.
Lola?
You transfer it.
I'm saying you have Meiser Sheni.
Wait, you're allowed to take your own money and transfer it?
Well, you have to. Okay, yeah. We're going to talk about what kind of coins you have to use. You have what the breakdown.
I always said that you have to, like, sell the Meiser Sheni.
Well, you have to get rid of the Kedusha somehow. So the way to do that is by transferring the Kedusha onto coin. Let's see. So look at the Mishnah. Hapori Selah Mimos Meiser Sheni. I want to take the Kedusha from my Meiser Sheni and transfer it to coins. How do you do that? B'shamay Omrim, B'chol Selah Maos, B'shamay Omrim, B'shekel Kesef, B'shekel Maos, B'meyur Omer, In Mechal, In Kesef, U'pero Selah Kesef, B'chachom Matri. In these three lines is literally like half a Perek Hazav. Okay? Let me try to explain to you what's going on. There's a very fundamental machlokas which appears in the opening lines of the Gemara in Perek Hazav about the concept of what's called Tiva versus Pera. Okay? Literally, Tiva means coins, Pera means fruit. Now, we usually assume that coins is money and fruit is fruit, right? That's what we generally assume. In the Gemara's mind, fruit and coins are not objective. Fruit and coins are relative. What do I mean by that? For example, in the context of Meister Sheni, there are two types of coins that we're dealing with. What are the two types of coins? We have copper coins, Nechoshes, and we have silver coins, Kesel. Okay? Very straightforward. Now, in contrast to Nechoshes, generally speaking, we usually assume that silver is worth more than copper, because it is, right? So if I have a silver coin, the silver coin, in contrast to the copper coin, the silver coin is the kesef, the tiva, the coins, and the copper coins, which are less valuable, are the peira, the fruits, not because they're fruits, but just because they are less valuable, okay? That's just basic information. Now, but there is a little bit of a twist to this, as we're going to see coming up in this mission, again in the next mission. So listen up. In the context, objectively, silver coins are worth more than copper coins. However, Bishamai, both here, and as we'll see coming up in the next mission as well, Bishamai happens to hold, this is a Matzias difference. Bishamai says that silver coins are only more valuable than copper coins when you're outside of Yerushalayim. What on earth does that have to do with anything? How does that affect the value of the coins? She says it doesn't affect the value of the coins, but it affects the benefit or the practical usage you get out of the coins. What does that mean? So as we'll see in Mishnah Yud a little bit more, when you come to Yerushalayim, so there already, it's more, apparently it was more practical to use the copper coins. Either because the shopkeepers used copper coins more frequently, because if you think about it, the lower a denomination is, the more likely someone is to have that denomination, right? It's not like a guy walks around with a $100 bill, but it's more likely he walks around with a $20 bill, right? So the lower a denomination is, the more likely more people are to have it.
Like American walks around with a $100 shekel and then like you want to buy a Coke, and then like
it's like three, exactly. Yeah. So exactly. So that's the point. That it's more likely that you will have a lower denomination on your person than to have a higher denomination. So according to Bishamai, once you're in Yerushalayim and you have to go and redeem the Meister Sheni, the pruta, the nechoshes, the copper, is more practical than silver. Yes, the silver is still worth more money, obviously, but that's not relevant according to Bishamai. When you're in Yerushalayim, so that changes the game. What about Reb Meir Shita? What does Reb Meir hold? Reb Meir holds that you're not allowed to be mechal of kesef who peiros ala kesef. What? One second. Okay, good. So look at what they say in the Mishnah, okay? What does Bishamai say? The shekel kesef who v'shekel los. I have, let's say, $100 worth of Meister Sheni that I want to redeem. How do I go about redeeming that? What do I do? So according to Bishamai, what? Let's say you have food in Meister Sheni. So according to Beis Shammai, according to Beis Hillel, he says, according to Beis Shammai, the chol selamot, Beis Shammai says that you can redeem all of your Meister Sheni using silver coins. Again, this is outside of Yerushalayim. You have not entered Yerushalayim. So remember, outside of Yerushalayim, silver is objectively more. That's considered tiva, the coins, in contrast to the payer of the fruit. And therefore, when you're outside of Yerushalayim, Beis Shammai says, go ahead and redeem all of your Meister Sheni with silver coins. Beis Hillel says you have to split it 50-50. Half the coins you redeem, or half the fruit you redeem, using silver coins, and half you redeem using copper coins, because the copper coins are not completely valueless. One more second. According to Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir says, "In mechal in kesef uperos al kesef." According to Rabbi Meir, you cannot redeem fruit or other silver coins using silver coins. Meaning, I can't redeem silver with silver. But the Chacham say it's okay because they say you are allowed to redeem the same type of coin with another coin. I can watch one more second. Just a frame. Yeah, right. What do you mean? There's a certain requirement. There's a certain baseline requirement of the way in which I'll give you an example. The Gemara says in Bava Metzia, the Pasuk says in Parshas Re'eh, "Vitzarta hakesef biyadecha." You have to bind the money, the silver, literally, in your hand, and you use that to redeem the Meister Sheni. Okay. What kind of coin do you have to use? So the Gemara has a shayla machlokes about what's called an asimon. What's an asimon? An asimon is a coin without an image on it. It's almost like a token, like a blank coin. A coin, like it's a piece of silver with nothing on it. So the Gemara says, can you use an asimon to be put in the Meister Sheni? So the Gemara says, you cannot. Why not? One second. Why can't you use an asimon? Because the Torah says that it's vitzarta. So the Gemara says it's a kesef sheyesh al absura. It has to be a coin that has an image on it. There's no image on the coin, that's not called a valid coin to put in the Sheni. It has to be a valid form of currency. That's the point. That's what the Gemara is saying. If I have a blank piece of silver, that's not a form of currency, right?
Was money valid?
There were no bills that existed back then. There were only coins.
Was money coins, valuable because the material was made out of?
No, absolutely not. Money was the same way that coins work today. Money only had value when there was a seal. The Gemara talks about Matzia, coins losing, right? What does that pasuk mean in Parshat Chayisara? Over la socher. What does that pasuk mean? What does over la socher mean? It means exchangeable currency. It means usable money. That's what all Parak HaSav is about. If you go to the Bank of Poalim in Israel, they show you the coins from 3,000 years ago and the process of how coins work. Every coin in history had imprints and images on it. That's the way coins work.
So I'm saying, if they have, so what's the usable currency as opposed to
an unusable? An unusable currency, if I give you a blank piece of silver with nothing on it, that's unusable. That's not over la socher. That's an asimo. What? It could be worth something besides the fact that it's a piece of silver. It may be worth something, but that's not relevant. That's
not kesef.
Right, correct. It's exactly the point. It may be silver. It's silver, but it's not kesef, right? In other words, I'm making a joke. Okay. Yeah, yes, but I'm saying in halacha, it's not kesef. Okay? Again, I'm just giving you an example. There are situations where you can have something that looks like a coin, which is not a coin. So a coin... There are certain criteria of how to divide up. It doesn't matter if you have 2 fives or 1 10. It's not stomach. You just decide.
No, that's different, though. That's
I'm giving you an example. It is valuable currency, but there are certain dinim about the kind of money that you have to give for Maaser Sheni. What do you mean?
Why do you need to be silver or not?
That's what I'm trying to explain to you right now. I'm trying to explain to you right now. This machlokas centers around the question of kibbutz versus kibbutz. There are certain dinim that appear above Metziah in terms of how to be pulled at Maaser Sheni. Okay? It's not clear that I can go ahead and use any coin I want to be pulled at Maaser Sheni. It has to have the status of a regular, valid, kosher coin in terms of Maaser Sheni. According to Beis Hillel, I need to divide the money that I'm using between copper and silver in order for that to be an effective pediyah. But in Shammai, I should just do silver when I'm outside of Yerushalayim. Inside Yerushalayim, I should do the next Mishnah. It's a different
deal.
No, he holds that copper, in contrast to silver, is meaningless. Because the din is, did we just say before, in the beginning of Shir, right? What did we say before? He said that there's kibbutz versus peder, right? This is Bav Metzia 101, okay? Bav Metzia 101, this is for you for in next month, right? Bav Metzia 101 is what? Kibbutz versus peder. Fourth parak of Bav Metzia. The only way you can be pulled in by Maaser Sheni is with kibbutz, with coins. What's considered coins? It comes Beis Shammai and says, when you're outside of Yerushalayim, copper coins are worthless in contrast to silver. They don't have any value, right? Not in contrast to silver.
Yeah, but if you have a lot of them,
it doesn't matter how many copper coins you have. You can have a bazillion copper coins. According to Beis Shammai, when you're outside of Yerushalayim, copper coins are valueless. They cannot be pulled in by Maaser Sheni with copper coins. Okay? That's a din. That's a din. It's cool. What? I'm not saying that copper coins don't have value. I'm saying that in the context of Maaser Sheni, where the din is that you have to be poda with tiva. Tiva is a halachic term that means a coin in contrast to other forms of currency. Yes, that's what the word literally means. But well, we'll see in the next Mishnah, La'av Dafka. In the context of our Mishnah, it may mean that. It's going to mean practically valuable coins. We'll call it that. In Mishnah, you have guys, in contrast... Yes.
And you probably can do it with $1 bill.
So,
you probably have to use 50, right?
Well, bills are will be a question in general. Okay, they didn't have bills back then, but... What? There's a famous chumrah from the Chazon Ish, which most people are not... Well, some people are mocked before it. You can't do pigeon aben with bills. You should pigeon aben with coins. Again, maybe because it could be the word kesef, and chumish means literally silver and not a bill. Okay, well, that's not for... That's not
right.
Kesef in the context of Maaser Sheni.
Right. I understand what
good, saying. Good. I'm not explaining that again. Okay, so that's Mishnah Tess. In contrast to Mishnah Tess, we have Mishnah Yud. Take a look at Mishnah Yud. Haporit Zela shall Maaser Sheni be Yerushalayim. Okay, so now we made it to Yerushalayim. Okay, now we're exchanging, we're redeeming the Kedusha from Maaser Sheni, all the coins, inside Yerushalayim. What does the Mishnah say? B'shamay omrim, b'chol ha-sela mo'os, b'shil omrim, b'shekel kesef, b'shekel mo'os. Comes B'shamay and says a complete 180 from what he said in the last Mishnah. Comes B'shamay and says, once you're inside Yerushalayim, only use copper coins. No silver coins. That's correct. It makes sense. Silver. What's the deal? What changes now that you're in Yerushalayim? Exactly, because this has practical currency, either because more people have the copper as a denomination, or because it's just easier to use, whatever this phone is. No, silver is not worthless in Yerushalayim. Honestly, it's a copper is more practical. You could say it like that, I guess, sort of. According to Beis Hillel, guys, according to Beis Hillel, though, Beis Hillel says, Meshekel Kesev, Meshekel Mos, the same word. You have to do a 50-50. Right? Beis Hillel is consistent in both Mishnahs. Right? Half silver, half copper. Says the Mishnah, Commission continues, Hadonim Lefnei Chachamim Omer, those people who judged in front of the Chacham, the people who came in front of the Chacham, they said, they quoted, Vishlosha Dinarim Kesef, Uva Dinarim Mos. They did a very strange kind of a division. They said we should divide it 3 and 1. In other words, 3 parts should be silver and 1 part should be copper. What's the svara behind that, guys? Why would we divide it up like that? Three to one.
3 to 1.
3 to 1.
That ratio.
That's what this says. What's the svara behind 3 to 1?
Because you can always have back the money if you need it, but the majority of it could be real money, but you also have a little bit of practical money.
Okay, so that's a basic idea. Again, we'll see as Mishnah goes on how the numbers fit in exactly.
Yeah. You have 5 silver coins, 5 bronze coins, but in fact that's like $50
well,
in silver and like $5
as a simple,
so like value. Like,
I think it means value. As a simple example, it would be
like 50 and 50,
let's say, if you had 100.
For value. You're thinking like, I would have 10 bronze coins and only 1 silver.
Yeah, yeah. 50, yeah, exactly. 50, okay?
What's the question?
Copper.
Copper.
Okay, so that is...
Bronze.
Bronze. I don't know if there's... I don't know if there's a separate word for bronze.
There's other metals.
I mean, there's Kesef and Nechoshek. That's all. And there's Zav. We're not talking about Zav right now.
Are there any other metals in
Chemish? I don't know.
No, in Gemara.
In Gemara. Not that I know. I think it's just silver, copper, and gold. Okay, so that is, guys, that is the sheet of the Chachamim. Guys, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Mishlosha Dinarim Kesef, Uberevius Mos. He says, use 3 dinar of Kesef, and the fourth one is copper. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Arba Aspere Kesef. Aspere is a different kind of a currency. That, use that as silver. Shammai Omer, Yanichena Bechanus, Yochal Kenegna. Shammai says, you just leave it in the shop, and you can eat the equivalent of the money that you gave. What does that mean exactly? So the Mefarshim here explain that what Shammai is driving at, he says that when I want to be paid the Meiser Sheni, so we assume that the value is going to depreciate, right? At a certain point, right? The way that the market works is that, right, things tend to fluctuate. So since we're Koshe, that things are going to depreciate, to devalue at a certain point, therefore we say that the currency, the value of the currency is going to go down, and therefore we say just leave it at the shopkeeper and don't use it for any, in other words, don't actually go and redeem it. According to Shammai, you should just take your coins. In other words, to take your coins and redeem them, but rather take your coins, just leave them by the shopkeeper. Just leave them there, and you don't have to actually do anything. You don't have to redeem them. According to Shammai, he says that you can... Meaning you're effectively being told that you're Meiser Sheni, but you're not actually handing the coins over to anyone. You're not doing a formal... In other words, you're effectively being Mechal of the Kedusha, but you're not necessarily handing over the coin to any... You're handing it to the shopkeeper. You're telling him... Keep it by. No, first you say because we're negotiating, the value of the money will depreciate.
Because
what's going to happen is if the value depreciates, you're not going to have the same amount of money that you gave initially.
Okay. So another way, you wouldn't have the same amount of money.
No, meaning according to Shammai, we don't want you to get involved in this story in the first place, because according to the other Tanaim and the Mishnah, there are very specific breakdowns of the money you're supposed to give in terms of the value of the currency, right? According to Shammai, Shammai says, the second you start getting involved with that, you're running into a problem that you may come to have, that, oh, your 3 copper coins are really now 2 copper coins, or your 1 silver is 2, right? You have this problem that's going to fluctuate. Shammai says, you're better off, take the money, give it to the shopkeeper, and go home. That's it. That's all you have to do. You don't have to do any formal pedia. No, meaning you accomplished a pedia without actually doing a formal pedia. That's the point. You have to do something. You have to be mechal of the kedusha.
You just lost the money.
But you transferred the kedusha by giving it to the shopkeeper.
To
the coins by giving it to the benefit of giving it to the shopkeeper is that it doesn't matter if the coins depreciate it afterwards. Because you're going to leave the coins by the shopkeeper. That's going to make it that it's not going to matter if the coins later on depreciate.
You're getting your money back.
You're not getting your money back. You just redeemed your Meiser Sheni. What do you mean? You never get your money back. Why would you get your money back?
Meiser Sheni is you go and eat it in your shrine.
Right. So now you can go.
You get benefit from the money. Just go in your shrine.
But no, you're eating your food. You have to pay money to eat your food. You have to transfer the kedusha, right?
I'm sorry, man.
Yeah, you're eating your food. You're just losing. What?
Shopping.
Yeah. Or no, you're. I have fruits that have kedushas meiser sheni, and I want to redeem them. Shammai says, don't do a formal pedia because of this whole chashad of depreciation. So just hand the money to the shopkeeper, eat your food, and go home. But it's so complicated. That's the way every meiser sheni works, except that the other ten I hold, you're doing a real pedia. You're transferring the kedusha from the food to the coins. You are in Yerushalayim, but you want to eat your food. Your food is right now has kedusha, and I want to transfer the kedusha to the coins. So I transfer the kedusha to the coins, and I can eat my food. According to Shammai, don't do a formal pedia because we're afraid the value is going to depreciate. Learn how's up, then you won't be so unclear. Okay, guys, Mishnah Yirah, okay? Totally unrelated. Mishnah Yirah. Kisei shel kala, shenot lu chipuya. Shammai metamin, uveisilo metari. I have a throne, a chair of a kala. What does that mean? A chair of a kala, whatever. It's a fancy kind of chair. The uniqueness of this chair is that it's not stama chair. It's a very fancy looking chair. What happens? So the chair loses, or somehow the covering, or the outside, the framework, or the legs of the chair, either get removed, or get broken, or something happens to the chair. So what's the deal, guys? In what context, for example, if I have a kli, in what context can a kli transmit tumah? How does a kli transmit tumah? Well, yes, but I'm saying, I'll put it differently. At what point does a kli lose the ability to transmit tumah?
If it's a kli, when
it's broken. Not
hilchos Shabbos.
When it's broken. If a kli is no longer a kli, then it's not a kli, and it can't transfer tumah anymore. No, okay, that's something else. Yeah. In other words, when a kli loses the status of a kli, if a certain intrinsic part of the kli breaks off, that's not a kli anymore. It can't transfer. Similar. That's a different issue. We're going to talk about that later. That's a different issue. Now, the Mishnah says, I have this kisei shel kala, and the frame around the chair, the throne, breaks. So what's the din? So what's the issue here? The issue is, it's a usable chair, but it's not a usable kala chair. So the question is, whenever a kli breaks, how do you define whether the kli is still tamei or not? Does it mean that it has to have the original ability of what the kli was supposed to function as initially, namely a kala chair? Or no, as long as it's a functional chair, that's also good enough. So that's good enough, like the Mishnah. But Shammai says it's tamei, because it says lemaisa, it's still a chair. According to the Silat Torah, because it's not a kala chair. Going to page Gimel, flipping the page. Shammai Omer, Av Malabin Shel Kisei Tamei. He says the Malabin, which refers to the part of the chair that's connected either at the legs or the frame of the chair, so that also, according to Shammai, can become tamei. Then the Mishnah says, "Kisei shekavu ba'ariva, Shammai metamei v'sotarim Shammai omer af he'osriva." What is this talking about? So if I have a chair which was made as a mixing bowl, what does that mean? I went to Restaurant Depot place. I bought a mixing bowl, one of those gigantic, you know, dough, challah, mixing bowl things. What did I decide to do? I said, you know what? There are no chairs around, all my chairs are getting fixed. I turn the bowl over and I sit down on the bowl. Well, this is what's coming, exactly. So I make my mixing bowl into a chair. So now the question is that mixing bowl, which is now a chair, is that able to be kabel tumah? A mixing bowl, guys, listen, a mixing bowl, generally speaking, is obviously not Rohi Li Yeshiva. No one sits on a mixing bowl, so no one would ever think in a million years that it can be metame through sitting, right? The only way, I'll give you an example. Let me explain. Okay, there is a din that in order for something to become tame with Tumas Mosh Mishkav Moshav, let's say, for example, if I'm tame, I'm a Zav. So now, if I want to figure out, what am I going to make tame? So if I sit on a bed, if I sleep on a bed, if I sit on a chair, they all become tummy. Why? Because the din is, there's a din in Parshas Metsora, there's Tumas Mishkav, there's Tumas Merkav, right? If I ride on a horse, if I sit on a chair, if I lie in a bed, all, what? Talk about that at a different time, not right now. Tumas Patara hasn't been, Fatasha's Chuma, whatever, any other. Theoretically, the truma can become a shlishi, so theoretically it can transfer. Okay, so in other words, I'm going to make all these things tamei, right? So how does that work? So normally, in order for me to be able to have tuma for something that I'm sitting on a chair and I'm a zav, so I want to know, is the chair tamei? So if it's a normal chair that's royally yeshiva that people sit on, so the chair will become tamei. The tumas mishka, sitting on the chair is now tamei, right? Tumas mosha, whatever. But what if I have something which is not really a chair, but I just decided to sit on it for some reason? So that obviously is not a chair, right? Let's say, for example, I sit on a table. So I could sit on a table, but it's not a chair. So A table can become tummy in other ways, but it can't become tummy by sitting on it. Because it's not meant to be sat on. It's not meant to be a chair. The only way you're going to ever have something become tummy by sitting on it is if it's roi liyeshiva. So the question now becomes, I take a mixing bowl. A mixing bowl is not roi liyeshiva. No one sits on a mixing bowl. But I decide to make my mixing bowl into a chair. So the question now becomes, is that going to make it tummy? So that's a machlokes in the Mishnah.
What do you mean? Just told me that if you don't...
No, but the question is, if I designate it to be a chair from now on,
designated.
I designated my mixing bowl, I used to be a mixing bowl, now I say, you know what, I want it to be a chair. So now the question is, so that Shammai says, Taka, it's going to be Tomei, it's a chair. Rabbi Yisrael says, no, it's still a mixing bowl, it's not going to matter. Shammai says, even if it was made initially as a mixing bowl, and now you want to sit on it, so Shammai says, that's also going to become Tomei. That's also going to affect the status of the mixing bowl in terms of Tumah. By the way, you should know that one of the issues that people had with using, right, everyone in their sukkah uses the bamboo reed mats, right, everyone has those, the roll-out mats, right? So what's one of the issues with that? You're not allowed to use a davar ha-makabal tumah schach, right? Something which makabal tumah is not kosher for schach. What's the problem with the reed mats? If people sit on a reed mat, it's theoretically makabal tumah's magic. So you can sit on the reed mat and make a tumah if you're a zav, you're a nid, or whatever. So why is it mutter to use that? So basman hazeh, we know that's the answer. The answer is that no one today uses reed mats to sit on. 50, 60 years ago, no one actually used those reed mats for schach, right? So it could be that the din actually changed because of that. Because today, no one actually uses it. What? What is it? Ancient Japan. Okay.
Anything with something? Wait, you have to be a. What's the rule about something that like that's fit to tumor?
What do you mean? You say machshu lekabel tumah by coming into the liquid? Well, okay, that's for fruits and vegetables.
Why can't the reed mat become tummy?
If a reed mat is not fit for sitting on, or it's never used in a context of sitting, then it's not going to become tummy.
I know.
Because that's just the din. The din is that tumah smith. First of all, most of the locals of the Torah are exeris akasas, but the din is just simply is it has to be a davar which is royally yeshiva. It has to be able to be. It has to be
any
used
in general.
In general. That's
in general, either that or there's a specific exeris akasas that's.
Yes,
that.
Correct.
So everything in the world is not makabel tumah. That's not a thing.
Well,
only specific things in the
yes,
world.
Yes, correct. There are specific things in the world.